This presentation is brought to you by iAwaken.org, a not-for-profit organization. We hope you enjoy the presentation. Please observe the copyright terms to which you have agreed.
Gal ben Yosef, and fifth is Hoshea ben Nun. So we can get some kind of idea of the stature of these people. Yehoshua, who is the spiritual successor of Moshe Rabbeinu, the most senior in Klal Yisrael after Moshe Rabbeinu himself, is listed fifth. Kalev is listed third. There were people more senior even to them. And the rest were certainly on that same kind of level. This was the absolute upper stratum of Bnei Yisrael. And they come back from their mission. In fact, they even go on their mission, convinced that there's no way that Bnei Yisrael are going to manage to be victorious in the conquest of Canaan. They've seen Paro being defeated. They've seen the Red Sea being split. They've seen Matan Torah. They've seen all manner of miracles. And yet they remain convinced that this is going to be too much. For whatever reason, we're not going to go down into the deep underlying spiritual and psychological reasons for their having chosen to adopt that attitude. But that's the attitude they take. Loi nuchal laloi sel ha'om. We will be unable to overcome these people. Ki chozok hu mimenu, for they are stronger than us. And the Gemara says in Soita Lamed Hei Omar Rabbi Chanino Bar Papa Dover Godel Dibru Meraglim Bo Yisosho. The Meraglim said, made a major statement at that moment, major even in Torah terms. Ki chozok hu mimenu, what does it mean? He's stronger than us. Al tikru mimenu elo mimenu, not stronger than us, but stronger than him. Ki biyochal afilu balabayis inu yochal lo hitzi keilov misham. As if to say, even the Ribbono Shel Olam will not be able, so to say, to get the Canaanim out of there and to enable us to conquer the nations. That's what they meant, and that's what they said. On the other hand, in the Haftarah, Yeshua sends two spies into the land, and they go to Yericho, and there they find Rachav Hazoina, which, if we're going to be kind to her, means she was a restaurateur. She had a restaurant. An ordinary woman, an ordinary Canaanite woman, who has had no contact with Torah, no contact with Yiddishkeit. Just one thing. She has heard, Es asher hivish Hashem esmei yamsuf mipneichem etzeischem mimitzrayim. She has heard how the Ribbono Shel Olam caused the Red Sea to dry up before them. That much she's heard. That's all she knows. She hasn't learned Chumash. She hasn't learned Tanakh. She hasn't learned Mishnayos. She hasn't learned Gemara. She hasn't seen Gedolei Yisrael. She's never come into contact with the Chazon Ish, or with the Chofetz Chaim, or with the Vilna Gaon, or with the Noda B'Yehuda, with Rabbi Akiva Eiger, or with the great Amoraim, Tanoim. No contact at all. All she's been in contact with is her Canaanite surroundings. And yet she's prepared to be Moseres Nefesh. She's prepared to give her life to save these two spies, because she's convinced Klal Yisrael is going to win. And she said to the men, "Yodati ki nosan Hashem lochem esaret. I know that God's given you the land. V'chi noflo emotchem aleinu, and that your fear has fallen over us. V'chi nomegu kodesh v'horetz mipneichem, and that all the dwellers of the land have melted before you. Ki shomanu, why? Because we have heard es asher hivish Hashem es meyam suf mipneichem etzeischem mitzrayim. How the Ribbono Shel Olam dried up the Red Sea on your way out of Egypt. V'asher atisim v'shnei malchei ha'emirim, and what you did to the two kings of the Emirim. Asher be'ever ayadim l'sichun eloig asher how you destroyed Sichon and Og, Vanishma, and we heard Vayimas Levavenu, and our hearts melted, and there is no spirit in any man before you. Listen to these words from this Rachav. Because the Ribbono Shel Olam, he is the God in the heavens above and in the land below. He rules over the entire universe. And therefore make a deal with us, that for saving your life, you'll save my life and the life of my family. Where does she get this from? The 12, 10 of the 12 greatest men of Israel are trembling in fear and believe that even God is not going to get them out. And the little hotel owner in Yericho, if anybody's been to Yericho, you know it's not exactly the center of the universe. Not today, nor was it then. She's already heard the whole business, and she with her own, on her own, without hearing Musa Shmuzin, and without learning the Chavis Halvavis, and without learning the Mesivis Yeshorim, she's come to the conclusion that Hashem Hu Ha'iliki, that there's one Ribbono Shel Olam, and that He is almighty and all-powerful, and that He will destroy the Canaanite people, because they're wicked and deserve to be destroyed, and the land is going to belong to the Jewish people. The contrast is amazing. And when we discussed this previously, we gave an answer. We'll adopt another approach to that tonight, this evening. There's another difficulty. In reporting back to Bnei Yisrael, among other things, the Meraglim say, the spies say, "V'shomro inu es hanefilin Bnei Anok min hanefilin," and there we have seen the Nephilim, sons of giants from the Nephilim. "V'anehi ve'enenu kechagovim," and we felt in our own eyes we appeared like locusts, like grasshoppers. "V'chein hoyinu be'enehem," and so we were in their eyes, like locusts. They didn't take us very seriously. Says the Medrash. Amru, when they said, "V'anehi be'enenu kechagovim," that we were in their eyes as that we were in our own eyes as locusts. Amar Hakadosh Baruch Hu, the Ribbono Shel Olam, said, "Vitarti aleihem." I'm moichel. I forgive them. That means that's also an avera. They had no right to say that. They had no right to feel that. You're a locust. You feel like a locust. Bnei Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, sons of Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, leaders of Klal Yisrael, people who only a short while ago stood at the foot of Mount Sinai and received the Torah. You feel like locusts. Good. It's a feeling. You've got the feeling. I'm not going to punish you for having a feeling, nor for expressing the feeling. Vitati ale. Good. Elo v'chein ayinu be'enehem. That to say that they also, the Canaanites, considered us like locusts. Yodim hayisim ha'asisi eschem le'enehem. Do you know what I made you look like in their eyes? What kind of prophets are you all of a sudden? Telling the Bnei Yisrael how they considered you, how the Canaanites considered you. How do you know how the Canaanites considered you? It's bad enough that you looked at yourselves as locusts. Who says that they too looked at you as locusts? The attitude that we take towards people and towards events upon first expression. I think gentlemen move to their chairs. It's better if you move in and sit down in the... How do you know how they appeared? The attitude we adopt to first appearances is not always based on scientific fact. It's based on all sorts of other things, including God's interference. How do you know how I made you appear in their eyes? And one sees that very often in the area of shidduchim. I'm not speaking of any recent shidduchim. But sometimes one sees two people fall in love and the one party is ugly as they come. And they're in love. And the guy will tell you, "But the moment I saw her, I fell in love." And you don't say anything. The dinners, you can't say anything. You just say, "I'm going to say how wonderful, she's a wonderful girl." But you wonder to yourself, you just saw her and you fell in love? That's the Ribbono Shel Olam interfering. First impressions are sometimes our own illusions, and sometimes it's the hand of God that interferes in these situations. Says the Ribbono Shel Olam, that you felt like a locust, that's bad enough. But how do you know what he felt like? It's funny that a lot of the Torah that I've learned has not been from Torah, but from people. And a lot of that I've learned from people has not been in the Rabbonus, it's been in business. I once had a product that I was trying to sell, and it was stuck. I'd had it for months already and I couldn't sell it. And I went into a particular customer and he said, "Have you got something?" And he described to me more or less what I had, and I couldn't believe it. And I said, "Look," I said, "I've got something like that. I must tell you though, it's a disgusting color." He said, "Let me see." He looks at it. He says, "Don't ever you tell a customer it's a disgusting color. Let him decide. What's disgusting for you is not disgusting for him. Please give me them all. It's just what I want." From there I learned. Sometimes the Ribbono Shel Olam gives people illusions and they look at something at first sight and they fall in love. It's not what you like. So what? That's why the world is an interesting place in which to live. Imagine if everybody wanted to marry the same girl and every girl wanted to marry the same man. Imagine if everybody liked the same house, everybody wanted the same job. It's a chesed of the Ribbono Shel Olam that he's given each one of us tastes and likes and dislikes, and there's no way one person can understand the likes and dislikes of another person. It's not rational, and it's not possible to understand it. And therefore we have to be very careful when we present people to one another or things to people, that we don't taint their attitudes to it just because we don't like it or because we do like it. The fact that we like it doesn't mean that we must force it on somebody else, and the fact that we dislike it doesn't mean that we mustn't force it on anybody else. We have to present it fairly and objectively. And therefore says the Ribbono Shel Olam, have you any clue how I made you appear in their eyes? How do you know that in their eyes you were not like angels? How do you know you were locusts in their eyes? Did you climb into their minds and see what they thought of you? That is one of the problems with low self-image. When we think little of ourselves, we usually tend to think that other people also think little of us. It's not so. Thinking little of ourselves is bad. We're not supposed to think little of ourselves. We're supposed to think accurately of ourselves. Thinking little of ourselves, we're not going to get punished for. Even the Meraglim weren't punished for that. Be tired of him. Think and feel what you want. But don't project that onto the way you expect other people to relate to you. It's not necessarily so. The Gemara, though, in that same Gemara in Sota Daf Lamed Hay, says something very different. Amar Av Meshashayo. Meraglim shakri havu. The Meraglim were liars. Bishlomo unehi beinenu kechagovim lechai. I can understand when they claimed we considered ourselves as locusts. Lechai, good. I understand it, says the Gemara, says Rav Mishashi. Elo vechena yinu beinehem. But when they said and we were locusts in their eyes, mana havu yadi, from where did they know? So far, so good. Answers the Gemara. Velohi, not so. When there were a lot of funerals going on at that time, the Ribbono Shel Olam did a chesed for the Meraglim, and people were dropping dead, and the Kananim were very involved in their Avelus, and so they didn't notice the Meraglim too well. But when they came back from the cemetery and they sat down to their Seudas Avroh to have a meal after the funeral, the Meraglim, they used to sit down under the tree, under the cedar trees, and the Meraglim climbed into the trees. And when the Meraglim saw Salku Yasvi Bilone, they went and climbed into the trees. Shami, they heard the Koamri Kachazid and Inshi, the Damulakamsi Bilone. They heard people saying, have you seen some strange apparitions around, little people that look like locusts jumping in the trees? So the Gemara, they could have overheard. Ask any paranoid person, how do you know that people think so badly of you? They'll say, I hear them talking, I hear what they say. And you'll ask them to give an example. And they'll give you some crazy example which doesn't mean that at all. But they hear, says the Gemara, it's quite possible. The Meraglim, they were spies after all. It was their business to plant bugs all over the place. Not locusts, but bugs. And it was their business to overhear conversations. So it's so difficult to overhear somebody saying, we saw funny people around, they look like locusts. Could be. So why does the Ribbono Shel Olam get so angry with them in the Medrash and say, how do you know what you appeared like in their eyes? Sure, they could have known. Who says that it's such a terrible thing what they said? What we need to do, and as I said, it's a brief shiur this evening, so we'll just take one aspect of it, is analyze the difference between the spies that Moshe Rabbeinu sent and the spies that Yehoshua sent. The spies that Yehoshua sent are interesting because Rachav continually relates to them in an ambassadorial capacity. She says, "Batimer el ha'anoshim." She said to the men, "Yodaiti, I know, ki nosan Hashem lochem esos, that Hashem has given you the land." What does that mean? You, the two of you, v'chi notlo emaschem oleinu, and that your fear is over us. Does it mean the two of you? V'chi namoigi kol yishvei haaretz mipneichem, and that the hearts of all the dwellers of the land have melted before you. Who does that mean? The two of you? For we have heard that how the Ribbono Shel Olam caused the Red Sea to dry up before you. Does it mean the two of them, they weren't even born at the time of the Red Sea? They were born later. Or very possibly born later. They were little children, if anything, at that time. And so on. So she's not talking to them as individuals. She's talking to Klal Yisrael. She's addressing them as members of Klal Yisrael and as representatives of Klal Yisrael, not just as members of Klal Yisrael, but as representatives of Klal Yisrael. And she proceeds to draw up a contract with them, which they willingly do under certain conditions, which binds every Jew to her. The contract is not that we or our unit will not destroy you or our family, and we'll do our best to make sure that our unit comes into this part of the town. No! The contract was that nobody of Klal Yisrael is going to affect her. The men said, "Nafshenu tachteichem lomus. We will give our lives to die instead of you. In lo tagidu es dvoreinu zeh, if you don't talk about this." And again, they report everything to Yeshua bin Nun. What right have these two people got to tie up a contract which binds every Jew? The answer is they're ambassadors. They're members of the government. They're not operating in their individual rights. As individuals, you can't tie up a contract that's going to bind other people. But they're not there as individuals. And an ambassador is entitled to make a statement which binds his country and which commits his country. In the case of the Meraglim, it's a little different. In the case of the Meraglim, first of all, they were sent on a different mission to the one they actually accomplished. Says the Medrash in Yalkut Shimoni, Omru Yisrael said, Moshe Rabbeinu, Nishlecho Anoshim Lefoneinu, let us send men before us. Omru Lehem Lama. Moshe Rabbeinu said, why? Omru Loi, they said to him, Shekvar Hivtichonu HaKadosh Baruch Hu Ve'omar Lona. The Ribbono Shel Olam has already promised us and has said to us, She'onu Nichnotzim Le'eretz Kanan, that we are going to enter the land of Canaan, Ve'yorishim Kol Tuv, and we're going to inherit all the good things. We don't question that. We know that. But they've also heard this. They've heard that we're coming and what we've come to do. And they are making treasuries. And they are in which they are hiding their material wealth. And we'll come in and we'll find a devastated country. All the wealth which the Ribbono Shel Olam has promised us is going to be locked up in treasuries hidden underground. We're not going to know where anything else is. We're going to have a land which is not operable, which cannot function. It will be a chilul Hashem. We'll come into this empty land and what the Ribbono Shel Olam promised will not exist. Let spies go before us. The yiru lonu esoritz, and they will look at the land for us. They will perceive the land for us. Sorry, the yiru lonu esoritz ain't ksiv kan. It doesn't say, and they will look at the land for us. Elo v'yachperu lanu, they will search the land. They will dig up the land. Yelchu v'yamdu amash echofru ba'oritz, they will go and establish where the treasure has been hidden in the land. Kivan sheshoma ken nilkad b'yodon. When he heard that, he went along with them. Shneimar, as it says, Vayitov Be'enai Hadova. So the mission on which the Meraglim went was very clearly defined. The mission was not to come back and report whether we can conquer the land or not. The mission was not to investigate their military installations. All that we can leave to the Ribbono Shel Olam. The mission is merely to find where they're hiding their money, that's all. So that when they disappear, when they run away, or they're killed, we'll at least have the wherewithal to start running the country immediately. We won't have to start from nothing. Don't forget, Klal Yisrael have got very little. It should be a country which is already running. They come back with an entire different... They make no mention of that. Nothing. They didn't... No report at all of what they saw in terms of the Canaanites hiding their wealth. And in fact, the Gemara says, Vayashuvu mitur ha'oretz vayelchu vayavoyu, and they returned from searching the land. Vayelchu vayavoyu, and they went and they came. Omer Rabbi Yochanan mishum Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai. Rabbi Yochanan says in the name of Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai, Makish halicho lebiyo. The Torah wants to tell us that there was the same attitude when they went as when they came. Ma biyo beitzara, just as they came bad with foul intent, af halicho beitzara, so they went with foul intent. So they went to the land already having decided we're not going to do what we were sent to do. We were sent to prepare the way, to find where this hidden treasure is hidden. That's not what we're going to do. We're going to undermine the land. We're going to come back and try and dissuade Klal Yisrael from proceeding with this crazy venture. That being the case, they're not representatives of Klal Yisrael. They've resigned their ambassadorship. They were given a mission and they've gone on a different mission. Who decided on the mission on which they've actually gone? They did themselves. Nobody gave them that mission. Nobody told them to. Moshe didn't. The Zakenim didn't. This is their own decision. You're going on a private mission then it's a different story altogether. When they go on a private mission, they feel like locusts, as the Gemara tells us, and they hear themselves being referred to as locusts. Good, that's also understandable. Every time a Canaanite walked down the road, he saw somebody jump into a tree. Like locusts, when you walk on the street and there's a locust, you just see something jumping. You didn't see it before. If the locust would just have stood still, he's so well camouflaged, and he's so small and insignificant, that you wouldn't have seen him had he stood still. But he doesn't, he jumps. And then you see, oh, there was a locust in the path. The same with the Meragli. They were so small and insignificant as far as these massive Canaanim were concerned that they wouldn't have even taken any notice of them. They could just have hidden behind a bush. Instead, they jump up into the trees. And all the Canaanim see are these funny people jumping in trees wherever they go. And they comment at the mealtime, seen this funny thing? We came back from the cemetery, and wherever we went, there were people jumping in the trees, little people. They're right. And therefore, their impression is, we were in our own eyes like locusts, and they thought we were locusts. We were so insignificant. Ask the Medrash, how do you know that you weren't in their eyes like angels? What does the Medrash mean? They said quite clearly, and the Gemara says quite clearly, and it's quite logical, they could have overheard that. It's interesting to note that whenever the non-Jew mocks the Jew, he mocks the individual Jew, not the nation. It's always the caricature of the Jewish moneylender, or the Jew with the long nose, or the filthy Jew, or whatever. It's always one Jew. They paint a picture of one Jew, whether they're painting a verbal picture or they're painting a plastic picture, it makes no difference. They don't mock the Jewish nation. Never ever do you find the Jewish nation being mocked. There's nothing to mock about it. A nation that has survived for over 4,000 years, a young little nation of only a few hundred years, doesn't mock. A nation which has given to the world what the Yidden have given to the world doesn't get mocked for that. A nation which is taught monotheism, a nation which is taught culture and civilization, a nation which was learning, reading, studying and writing, while the present nations were running around like barbarians, killing one another, that nation doesn't get mocked. Who gets mocked? Individuals. Single individuals, they make a caricature. If one wants to mock an individual, you can't talk about him in his totality. Because in his totality, all individuals are okay, unless they're insane people. I'm talking about all normal people are okay in their totality. Some have more of one ingredient and less of another ingredient, and some have more of the other ingredient and less of the one ingredient. Each one is different. But in totality, most people are fairly stable, normal human beings. And if you'll describe a person in his full context, he doesn't look odd. His behavior doesn't look odd either if you describe him in his full context. If you want to undermine a person, if you want to make a person look idiotic, just take him out of context, like a cartoon. Just paint his nose much bigger than the rest of him. Focus down on his nose and it looks funny. Focus on his ears. Any person, it makes no difference. On his neck, on his hands, on his legs, on his feet, whatever you want. Take any single part of him and blow it out of proportion and you create something odd. Without telling a lie, because as the Gemara says with the Meraglim, with Lashon Hara, there has to be something true. If it's totally false, people reject it immediately. And so it is with cynicism. If you want to be cynical, you've got to be clever. You've got to be accurate. You mustn't talk nonsense. If you want to be effectively cynical, you've got to take a real quality of the person and you've got to just distort it. You've got to blow it out of proportion, leaving aside the context. Whether if it's an action of a human being, leave behind the behavioral context, the circumstances in which it took place, the background and education of the individual, that which led him to perform that particular action. Just take the action and you can take any action and disassociate the background and it looks odd. You just look at the people sitting next to you. If you don't tell the person, if a person comes in here from Mars and you don't tell them that these people are listening to a shiur, you would look around and burst out laughing. A group of people sitting dead still, staring. What's going on? He doesn't understand the context and the background, sure. And so you can take the most sensible and beautiful of actions and the most sensible and beautiful of people and most sensible and beautiful of the features of people, and by taking them out of context they look idiotic. That is possible to do. When the Goyim want to deride the Jews, they take a Jew out of context. Because we operate as a nation. It's true we're individuals, but we operate as a nation. To take one Jew, any one Jew, is so unique that he's on the verge of being a bit odd. A Jew, he has a neshama, he has his own way of thinking, he has originality. And you know how it is, if you take a colourful sort of person and you look at him, it's easier to find in a colourful person a degree of oddness than it is to find in a flat individual. And so the Jewish people have got all these hundreds and these thousands of years of culture and background on which to draw are rich. And they're funny, they're strange, until you put them together as a nation. And they function together as a nation, there's nothing like them. When they all pull together in different directions, there's nothing as crazy as them, there's nothing as odd. Put them together and you've got the most beautiful structure of a nation that is able to achieve what no other nation has ever achieved. That's the power of the Yiddish people, and nobody will mock that and nobody will deny that. The Meraglim go into Canaan as individuals. Of course they're little locusts jumping around. That's what they feel like and that's what they look like. And a Jew goes into a foreign country on his own, he looks like an odd locust. He stops putting on his tefillin. I remember once in his talus and then in the middle of an aeroplane or whatever. Once there were a group of us travelling in England from Yeshiva, and it wasn't that we left that early if I remember correctly, but in northern parts of England in the winter it just gets light that late that we had to daven on the train. The train stopped in one of these mining villages and a whole lot of English miners got onto the train, and there was wind blowing through the train as they opened the doors and our talis were flapping around, and this miner got on, just he looked and said, "Cool, Batman." And it was just at the time of the peak of Batman, and he really meant it. He was absolutely staggered. He couldn't believe it. He's never seen such a thing. It was such an eye opener for him. He really thought this was Batman impersonated. And it wasn't the time of the morning where people play jokes and just play that they're Batman. It's not that wasn't thought of as a possibility. A Jew on his own looks odd, but if you'll see 50-60 people standing together and davening with a minion with a talis and tefillin, no goy will say Batman. What's going on here? Stand and look, this is interesting. And that's also happened many times where there's been a group of us. We were in the Belgian Congo once, in fact, right after the uprising there. And the plane had stopped for a while, and longer than intended. We had to daven. So all of us got together as a group and started davening, which was a dangerous thing to do because in a few minutes we were surrounded by soldiers who had their guns trained on us. They thought we were plotting a counter-revolution or whatever. But it didn't take them too long to realize what was going on, and they went on their knees. They immediately realized that wouldn't have happened if there was only one of us davening. The impact of a group of Jews operating as a minyan, as a tzibur, as a klal, is something which is never mocked and something which is never seen as flippant and as anything less holy and beautiful than it really is. A Jew on his own is a caricature. A Jew on his own is odd, he's funny, he's crazy and he's weird. We know that. When a Jew infiltrates into Canaanite society and operates as an individual, then he feels like a locust and he looks like a locust. Jumps around, darts around. That's how he is. Not so in the case of the spies that Yoshua sent later on. Those two went specifically to do what they were told to do, and we see how they are related to as ambassadorial representatives, because she draws up contracts with them. So she also related to them as ambassadors of Klal Yisrael. That's how they were there. Nobody laughed at them. Nobody mocked them. They didn't feel like locusts and they didn't look like locusts. These were people that were seen as part of the massive group of people, of God's chosen people, who had performed these wonders and these miracles. And in fact, the result of that, the Gemara tells us in Megillah, is that Rachav converted. She became Jewish afterwards, as we could expect, but the story has an even happier ending. She became Rebbetzin Yoshua bin Nun. She married Yoshua. What did she do to deserve that? This Rachav, this restaurant owner of Yericho, marries Yoshua bin Nun, the king of the Jewish people, successor to Moshe Rabbeinu, and from that union 8 prophets are born. We understand that from a situation where Shaul was instructed by the Ribbono Shel'olam to wipe out the Amalekites, and among the Amalekites there was a group of people called the Kenim. Before proceeding to wipe out the Amalekites, Vayomer Shaul el HaKeni, and Shaul said to the Keni, Lechu suru redu mitoich Amaleki. Get yourselves out of the Amalekim area. Pen oisif cho imo, lest I destroy you with him. And you did a kindness with the entire Jewish nation when we came up from Egypt. And therefore I'm giving you this opportunity to get out of the Amaleki area so that you should survive and be able to live in peace. And the Keni immediately moved over. And we think back. What did the Keni people do to the whole of Klal Yisrael on the way out of Egypt? What case was there? Says the Radak, from quoting the Midrash. Bechim kol bnei Yisrael also chesed, the Kenim are descendants of Yisroel. There wasn't a nation when they came out of Egypt. When the Jews came out of Egypt, there was only one Keni, and he was Yitroel. And did he do chesed with the whole of the Jewish people? Ba'aloi lo also chesed eloi Moshe, he only did chesed to Moshe. Hado dichtiv, as it says, kro'eno loi v'yoichal lochem, call Moshe in, he said to his daughters, and let him have a meal with us, after Moshe had saved his daughters. Just basic menschlichkeit, that's all. He saved the daughters, and he says to them, did you invite a man in? The girl said, no, you've taught us not to invite strange men in. He says, yes, sir, some kind of a strange man, he's just saved your lives, and you let him go, call him in and let him have a meal. And l'lamed echol, but it comes to teach us, shekol o'iseh tevoyim echod migdoli Yisrael, if one does a goodness with one godol be Yisrael, one great person among Israel, ma'ale olov ki'ilu also chesed in kol Yisrael, the Torah regards it, the Ribbono Shel Olam regards it, as if you've done chesed with the entire Jewish people. If you do chesed to one Jew, that's chesed to one Jew. If you do chesed to a leader of Jewish people, to a godol be Yisrael, that's chesed to the entire Jewish people. And because of that one act, one man being invited to one meal, an entire nation is saved centuries later. The descendants of Yisroel are all saved because Yisroel invited somebody into a meal, but not just an ordinary somebody, it happened to be Moshe Rabbeinu. Rachav saves two people. But there are many people who have saved lives before. Doctors are saving lives every day. Is that the schar for saving a life? That a Zoino should land up marrying a Melech Yisroel? Is that the degree of reward? No. That's the degree of reward for saving Gedolei Yisrael. People that you're doing it to them, not in their personal capacities. I'm saving you, she says, because of who you represent. I'm saving Klal Yisrael by saving you. And I know that, says Rachel. It's not just you as individuals. When one relates to an individual in his capacity as a leader of Klal Yisrael, one gets the reward as having saved the whole of Klal Yisrael. And Rachav gets the reward of having saved the whole Jewish nation. And that leads us to understand a number of things. Firstly, the value of our Gedolei Yisrael. We discussed this earlier in the Lady Shir. That we discussed it last night also. These aren't people who are like us just a little bit more. They're like us just a little bit more frum. And they're like us, but they know a little bit more Torah, or a lot more Torah, or infinitely more Torah. They're like us, but they have more Kedusha. These are different breeds. Completely different type of person, a different quality of person, a different... there's just no comparison. There's no way we can understand them and we can fathom their depths. And when we do chesed, we also have to know that the chesed that we do is judged not only on the greatness of the subject or the greatness of the action, but also on the greatness of the object, who one is doing chesed with and in what capacity. To do chesed for the whole of Klal Yisrael is not something which is terribly easy. Even to do chesed with Gedolei Yisrael is not that something which is terribly easy. We don't have that exposure to them. But it is possible to develop the ability to be constantly concerned for Klal Yisrael, to see the Gedolei Yisrael as what they are. The effort today, as we discussed earlier in the Lady Shir, is to minimize the influence of Gedolei Yisrael. Each sect will tend to feel he's my godel and the rest is nothing, nobody. Rachav didn't say Yeshua is the leader of that people, we have our own leaders. Yisrael didn't view it that way. When we're talking about adopting an attitude of chesed to Gedolei Yisrael, we're talking about understanding the universalism of a godel be Yisrael. It doesn't matter which group he leads. That's not what's important. A godel be Yisrael leads Klal Yisrael. That's what's important. When we're dealing on that stature of people, one's dealing in a small handful of people. It's not as if there's an enormous number of such people. when one's dealing with the upper rungs of Jewish society, those people are people that belong to Klal Yisrael and serve Klal Yisrael and have Klal Yisrael at their interests, and they are non-sectarian. Our ability, our attempts to create a sectarian godel is already a destruction of the whole concept of a godel b'Yisrael. Our attempts to say, yes, he's a godel, but he only has the interests of such and such a group at heart. He doesn't have the interests of Klal Yisrael at heart. If that is correct, he is no godel. If that is incorrect, then we have no right to say or to adopt such an attitude. One needs to understand when one's dealing with a godel b'Yisrael, one is dealing with Klal Yisrael. When a godel b'Yisrael gives you advice, he's not giving you advice only in your own interests. He's not only your personal rabbi giving you an advice. When a godel b'Yisrael gives an etzah, he's giving an etzah what's good for Klal Yisrael. If a godel b'Yisrael says to you, you should do A or you should do B, that doesn't just mean you should do it for your own good. He's not giving that advice in that capacity. It's in the interests of Klal Yisrael that you should do A or that you should do B. We can develop more of an attitude of care and concern for Klal Yisrael in our tefillah, in our prayers, in our thoughts, to see ourselves and view ourselves not as locusts, not as odd little people all going on our own routes, but as individuals with individuality who form part and whose pride lies in that we do form a part of Klal Yisrael wherever they are. And when Klal Yisrael is misbehaving itself in one part of the world, that should hurt us and aggravate us just as much as if our own children are misbehaving ourselves. And if Klal Yisrael are achieving greatness in some part of the world or another, that should thrill us just the same. And whatever Jew turns up from wherever he comes, there's a feeling of this is all part of the same group of people. And it's also important to bear in mind that we have to take measures to ensure that we remain parts of Klal Yisrael and that we don't wander off as the Meraglim did. One of the ways we do that is through Tefillah B'Tzibur, with David in a minyan. There are many reasons why that's so important. One of the reasons it's so important is just that. Not standing in my own house davening. Who are you davening for? For myself. Davening for Klal Yisrael, then do me a favor, daven with Klal Yisrael. If you're not davening for Klal Yisrael, then what are you davening for at all? That's how we do it. We daven as a group of people. And we cover for one another. If in certain aspects the Ribbono Shel Olam answers the minyan as a minyan, and he can't then say, or doesn't then say, I'm not going to answer you because you don't deserve it for this reason, and you don't deserve it for that reason, because we cover for one another. He doesn't deserve it for that reason, but he does for another reason, and he deserves it for some other reason. Each one of us has our strong points, and when we stand together, we're a group. We're a trade union. We've got bargaining power with the Ribbono Shel Olam, as long as we're together. In attitudes. And also in the matter which Rabbi Hollander spoke about a little bit earlier, not to use our individuality to create our own philosophies. That's the greatest danger of all. The Meraglim created their own philosophy. We have decided, as the 10 of us, that it is not in the interest of Klal Yisrael to go into Canaan. But that's not what Klal Yisrael decided, and that's not what the Ribbono Shel Olam decided. Great energy and effort has to go into making sure that we maintain authenticity. All we need to know is what is the halacha, what does the Ribbono Shel Olam want from us, and we adjust our philosophies to that. The moment we start creating individual philosophies, what is your opinion about X, Y, Z? I don't have an opinion about X, Y, Z. I'm no novi, I'm no prophet. And if I did have an opinion, it would be of no interest to you. Why should my opinion be any better than yours? If you're asking what the Torah says about it, let's study and see. Let's learn, let's analyze, let's question. Let's find out what the Torah says about it. But then it's binding. Opinions we don't need. We have to be very careful to avoid becoming opinionated and to increase our efforts to become halachically orientated towards the opinions and the halachas and the desires of the Ribbono Shel Olam, of our balabos, and not of ourselves, so that we remain ambassadors in everything that we do, and that we see our actions not as private actions, that we see our opinions not as private opinions and our feelings not as private feelings, but that our actions are actions of ambassadors of Klal Yisrael, that our opinions are the opinions of the nation, of the Ribbono Shel Olam, and that our feelings are feelings of the nation. And with that knowledge, the responsibility that will be given to us and that will be felt by us will be greatly increased, bringing with it commensurate increase in Siyata Dishmaya.